From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio.
Welcome to the 64th episode of NIH Research Radio, with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Joe Belinfi. Coming up in this episode, what researchers are looking for in terms of cancer health disparities, and an interview about how to avoid heat-related illnesses. But first, how smokers who stick together quit together. That's next on NIH Research Radio.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter, because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
A recent study looked at how social networks, that's families, friends, coworkers, influenced the decision to quit smoking. Here's Wally Akinso with a report.
For smokers, kicking the habit is a hard thing to do, though odds are smokers are not alone in making the move.
The clusters of people who were friends, siblings, spouses, co-workers tended to quit together when they quit.
Dr. Richard Sussman is the director of the Social and Behavioral Research Branch at the National Institute on Aging.
It looked at the impact of social relationships on smoking and specifically on quitting smoking.
The decision to quit smoking often tunnels through social networks with entire clusters of spouses, friends, siblings, and coworkers giving up the habit roughly in tandem, according to an NIA study. Researchers analyzing changes in smoking behavior over the past 3 decades within a large social network found smokers quit in groups and not as isolated individuals. Dr. Sussman talks about some of the interesting findings amongst the various social networks.
When a husband or wife quit, it reduced the chance of the other spouse smoking by 67%, for a sibling 25%. A friend quitting decreased the chance of smoking by 36% among their friends. And in small firms, a co-worker quitting could cut smoking amongst his or her peers by 34%, but not in larger firms. Neighbors didn't seem to be influenced by each other's smoking habits.
Dr. Sussman delivers an important message dealing with the social context of kicking the habit.
What any one person does really affects people other than themselves.
Dr. Sussman says that the public health message of the study is that no one is an island. One's health is partially determined by their social networks and those around them. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
You know smoking leads to cancer. Well, here's another report from Wally Akinso on cancer, in particular, cancer disparities.
The National Cancer Institute's Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities hosted the 2008 Cancer Health Disparities Summit. Dr. Donald Warren is the Health Policy Research Director for Intertribal Council of Arizona and a NCI grantee.
The theme this year is eliminating cancer health disparities through science, training, and community.
Dr. Willie Underwood is an assistant professor in the Department of Urology at Wayne State University of Medicine and also a NCI grantee.
Most of the topics are around the top 5 cancers. that have the highest disparities issues. One is prostate cancer. Secondly is lung and bronchus cancer, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and pancreatic cancer.
The summit was held from July 14th through July 16th. It highlighted the science of the programs and grantees funded through the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities. Dr. Underwood talks about the impact of cancer health disparities in the African American community.
We know the deaths from all cancers combined for both men and women are highest among blacks. African American women who are diagnosed with breast cancer are less likely than white women to survive 5 years after diagnosis. The rate among African American women is 71% compared to 86%, and that's for survival of breast cancer for whites. African American male have far higher death rates of prostate cancer, 2.4 times higher. The incidence of colorectal cancer among African American women are higher than that among whites. Lung cancer is the leading cause of death for African Americans when you look at cancer deaths.
Dr. Warren talks about how it impacts the Native American community.
If you look nationally, our most common cancers are lung and bronchus cancer, but also prostate, colon and rectum cancer, kidney and renal pelvis cancer, and stomach cancer. But we see tremendous variation. Some regions of the country have much lower rates of lung cancer than others, primarily due to the rates of cigarette smoking.
Dr. Warren explains how this summit benefits Native Americans and other groups.
One of the major benefits of the summit is to find out what other populations are doing. I think that the projects like ours, that is a community network program, we will benefit tremendously by learning what other programs are doing, what other populations are doing, what other communities are doing. And when we share information in a forum like this, we learn from each other, and perhaps there's templates of projects or even ideas that we hadn't thought about that we could try to implement in Indian country.
Both Dr. Warren and Dr. Underwood cite that the goal of the summit was to enhance mutually beneficial interactions among the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities programs by sharing scientific knowledge, encouraging junior investigators, and broadening community participation. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
Coming up, how to handle heat. Stay tuned.
Attention swimmers, get out of the water. Everybody, out of the water immediately.
Dude, is that? It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom who's been swimming a lot with her kids must have lost them.
Whoa. I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The month of August may have plenty of heat left to dish out this summer, which could result in heat-related illnesses. Another term for that is hyperthermia.
Yeah, hyperthermia is actually a set of conditions that relate to being exposed to very hot weather in the summertime. And it's a range of conditions that goes from fairly mild conditions of having cramps or having some fatigue, all the way up through heat stroke, which is a very serious and sometimes life-threatening condition.
We're talking to Dr. Jack Guralnick, Chief of the Laboratory of Epidemiology, Demography, and Biometry at the National Institute on Aging. What are some of those conditions?
There are several. I'll start kind of at the mildest ones. There's heat cramps, which are simply cramps in the muscles in the abdomen, arms, or legs that relate to becoming somewhat dehydrated and overheated. We also have swelling, what's been termed heat edema, which also can be from becoming mildly overheated. Heat syncope is a condition where people actually feel faint or pass out related to exposure to prolonged and high temperatures. Heat exhaustion is the kind of the next worst step, where people become quite fatigued, may sweat profusely, may become confused, have headaches. While in itself it doesn't lead to very poor outcomes, it may be a sign that you're headed towards heat stroke, which is really the thing that you absolutely want to avoid.
Well, what exactly is heat stroke?
Yeah, heat stroke is a condition where your body has essentially lost the ability to control body temperature. When we exercise and even in daily life, we generate a certain amount of heat, and the body has a variety of ways of getting rid of that heat. Of course, the most obvious is sweating or perspiration. When you develop heat stroke, your temperature rises and you lose the ability to sweat and to control your body temperature. So what you get into is a situation where basically your body temperature starts to soar. And heat stroke has been defined as having a temperature above 104 degrees. The other symptoms include fainting, which can sometimes be the first sign of heat stroke. Change in behavior. People become confused, become grumpy and irritable. They may start acting strangely. They may lose control of their body, so they may stagger or fall. Their skin may be dry and flushed rather than perspiring. And finally, if you take their pulse, they may have a strong rapid pulse or a very slow and weak pulse.
Are there populations that are especially at risk for hyperthermia?
Young infants are at risk. Older people, especially older people who have chronic conditions, conditions like heart disease and high blood pressure. Some of this is related to the disease, and some of it's related to the medications that people take. Certain medications, for instance, diuretics, may reduce your ability to perspire and so may put you at increased risk. Also, in terms of younger people, athletes are at risk, and we hear stories of football players training in the summer dying of heat stroke, even very, very healthy, highly trained athletes who are at risk. And even people who work outside in the heat, construction workers, gardeners, are at risk of heat stroke if they don't pay some attention to keeping their body temperature down.
How do you know when to call a health professional?
Well, certainly if an older person has fainted due to the heat, or if it's serious and they don't regain consciousness quickly, absolutely you should be calling 911 because it can be a medical emergency. Certainly if their temperature is elevated and rising, that absolutely is a medical emergency.
So what are some tips to prevent heat-related illnesses?
Yes, well, the most obvious tip is to try to stay in a cool place. And this is a tip particularly for older people. If you have air conditioning, you should use it. If you don't have air conditioning, it's important to try to ventilate your home, keep the shades down during the day. At night when it cools off, open up the windows to get some circulation. Use fans. On particularly hot days, it's important for older people to try to get to, who don't have air conditioning, to try to get someplace where there is air conditioning, where they can cool off for several hours. And there are a number of agencies that make these kinds of places available. Or even going to the shopping mall or to the movies can give you relief in the middle of the day. It's important to drink plenty of fluids during the day, to wear light, loose-fitting clothing. And sometimes older people get in the habit of wearing a certain kind of clothing, and they don't modify it adequately for when the temperature goes up. It's important to pay attention to the weather forecasting, when it's going to be particularly hot and humid, when the air pollution levels are going up. Older people should really try not to spend too much time out of doors during the peak hours of heat in the middle of the day.
Are there any other tips to remember as temperatures climb?
Yes, it is important to drink plenty of fluids, and there are experts who recommend drinking 6 or 8 glasses of water or fruit juice a day. One important consideration is that when you are at risk of hyperthermia or heat-related conditions, you should avoid alcoholic beverages and even avoid drinking an excessive amount of coffee or tea, which also can impair your ability to regulate your temperature when the temperature goes quite high.
Is that because of the temperature of the drink itself, or is it the caffeine that's associated with it?
It is the caffeine itself that has that effect. So iced tea with caffeine in it will also have that effect.
To wrap things up, what are some resources available to combat heat?
Yeah, there are several resources that people should know about. If people don't have air conditioners, there's an organization called the Area Agency on Aging that at times is able to provide window air conditioners to people. These days, there may be people who have air conditioners who simply can't afford to run them, especially during the hottest weather. There are agencies that provide support for people who are having problems with their electric bills. For instance, there's an organization called the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. And if you call your area agency on aging, they can direct you towards that program. Also, for any questions related to hyperthermia, the National Institute on Aging can answer your questions and direct you to people who can help you locally.
Thank you, Dr. Jack Guralnick of the National Institute on Aging. Again, here are some of those resources. You can call the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, their elder care locator, toll-free at 1-800-677-1116. Again, that's 800-677-1116. Or the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, again, toll-free, at 1-866-674-6327. Again, that's 866-674-6327. For these numbers and more information from the National Institute on Aging, you can also visit www.nia.nih.gov. That's it for this episode of NIH Research Radio. Please join us again Friday, August 22nd, when our next edition will be available for download. I'm your host, Joe Belinfi, and thanks for listening. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Liaison, and the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.